Chancey Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We are live from Oxnard, courtesy of the on-time experts, Rhino Shield and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar. Thank you very much for our sponsors for making this trip happen. We got a lot to break down today. We've got DeMarmion Overshone at 11, Joe Milton at 12, Bruce Bochy at 12:30. It is a jam-packed show today, but Corey, we also got to see the first practice yesterday. Now, I wanted to do like a little bit of a combination right here, if we can. Some Cowboys questions that matter, as well as any thoughts or observations you had from practice. It feels like the two biggest plays that I feel like got like people off their feet were obviously the Marshawn Nealon pick six. But the other one that I thought was really interesting was George Pickens making a reception, making a move, looking like he was going to take it to the house. And then he kept looking at Donovan Wilson to make sure Wilson didn't cut off his angle. And then, bam, Deron Bland came in there and popped the ball free, and people went crazy.
Yeah, I am kind of curious on how long those plays actually do go. Like, when do guys start? When do they quit?
Yeah.
Because it is a setup. If you're listening at home, just presume – usually the plays go about 30 yards, 30 or 40 yards. And then it's kind of like, all right, let the guy finish running. We're getting set up for the next play. But on occasions when it's a big explosive play, they do kind of keep going. And on that, Pickens, dude, he was open.
Yeah.
And he created more space after he got the ball in his hands and took off. And so that play did end up down the field even further, which was a lot of fun. There weren't a lot of huge plays like that yesterday. Listen. The quarterbacks are day one, you know. So there's going to be a little bit of time. And even Joe Milton, you'll hear him in the interview, it took him a little time to get things going. He told us off air, he was like, it was a little rough to start, but then we got in the move. And Kevin, he had about three or four great passes by the end of practice yesterday. Dak, very consistent. Had a couple moments where I was watching him, and he's like, I just got to get my touch back, you know. There were a couple short passes, but he was in command of the offense. Everybody seemed to know what they were supposed to be doing. That's a nice thing at this stage.
Yeah.
So that was good to see. The thing that I was trying to keep an eye on were two things. A, offensive line looks like it's set. That is the Tyler Guyton, Tyler Smith, BB, Booker, and then Terrence Steele at right tackle. That looks like that is first team no matter what. Remember during minicamp they were talking about how everybody kind of was, oh, this guy's with the twos, and this guy's with the ones, and what's going on here? And people were asking questions. Well, Schottenheimer was honest whenever he said that. Hey, we're going to mix it up here in camp because we need to see where guys go. And they found those places, and day one, it looks like that's your offensive line. The other thing that I noticed, it seems like there is a hierarchy in the running back
room. Yes.
And that hierarchy does look at the moment, Javonte Williams, and then Miles Sanders, who is a fill-in for Javonte. Jaden Blue with the second team is the lead dog there, and then the fill-in for him is Maffa and Deuce Vaughn. They get those. Maffa's a load, dude. You see how thick that guy is? So that's kind of the order I was looking at there. Not too physical, first day of camp, but it was actually pretty physical at the same time. So it was a fun day yesterday.
Yeah, I actually thought it looked way more physical than it
was.
First day of camp.
Shells on, you know, no full pads or anything, but you're right. They were getting after each other a little bit. It was fun.
And look, I know people are very focused and concerned about Micah's contract, and you've probably heard that to death. I was going to instead focus on the fact that out on the field, while he was not participating in the drills, Micah was definitely giving a lot of feedback to Ezra Raku.
Okay.
And that was one of the things. And because we kind of like spread out across the field once practice was going. And that was one thing I noticed pretty consistently, at least with Ezra Raku, although I saw him also check in with Nealon at one point, and I think it might have been Peyton Turner who made a couple of plays yesterday. So Micah was checking in, and it looked like giving some advice to some of the other players. Now, then again, they could have just been talking about, like, what do you want to do later? But I choose to believe that he was like, hey, here's what you did on that I really liked, and like, whatever. And I thought that was a good sign. Again, although I understand what people are maybe more concerned with what he said afterwards than, you know, what he was saying or doing during the practice. All right, We can bounce back and forth with that if you want more practice observations. But wanted to also get in some Cowboys questions that matter. How many games do y'all think Trayvon Diggs, Deron Bland, and Siobhan Revelle will play combined?
Oh, combined, not together.
Not together, combined.
All right, so that's so there's 17 games. I feel I think Bland might play a full season.
That
so I'm going to go ahead and lock him in for 17. I think Diggs, I'm going to go ahead and give him 11. How's that sound?
And Diggs and Overshown, by the way, since I said we were going to bounce back and forth, we're doing a lot of resistance work yesterday.
I'm going to give him 11. And then I'm going to give Revelle, I'm going to give him 15.
Pause. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you think the Cowboys, and Alec, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. Do you think the Cowboys would be stoked if Trayvon Diggs played 11 games?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think that they would be, I think they're still a little frustrated. They wouldn't have activated that clause if they didn't really have a commitment to that.
Yeah, the contract.
And you know what? How often do I feel like that's probably the Cowboys' fault? Is at times they've let things slide, and so players just think, well, they'll let it slide. And then they don't when their Cowboys are trying to be hard-nosed about it. And that, honestly, Kevin, that's how they should be. I mean, like, if you want guys walking on eggshells a little bit. You know, I know when Bill Parcells was here, Jerry kind of felt like everybody was on eggshells too much. But you do want guys, if they're not doing the greatest, you got to find ways to motivate them. So I think that they'd be happy if he played 17. I think they'd be stoked about that.
I mean, you just said that's 43. I think if that combination of Diggs, Bland, and Revelle play 43 of the 51 possible
games. That'd be amazing,
games,
honestly.
I think the fan base would be really excited about that as well.
No, for sure, because, there's so many times last year where you're like, it was a revolving door of cornerbacks. Yep. You didn't know which ones were going to be able to get on the field, and then at times you're like, who's this dude that we found in Dallas somewhere?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he was – and so – I think watching Kalen Carson, he looks a little slimmer this year. He looks and he looked better and faster yesterday. That was nice to see out of him. So I'm feeling pretty good on the depth there too. It's just that top level talent, Kevin. That is top level talent at that position.
Sure,
that's not like it's just like, oh man, these are guys that we're hoping can be there because we need cornerbacks. Those are really good cornerbacks that we would need to be there. One that needs a big contract. One that has a big contract, and then one that is the future of this team at the position.
Now, my next question that I was curious about, and I know you're going to have to project here, because we've talked a lot about, oh, it's enjoyable hearing Shoddy in the pressers, and you're like, and some fans are like, who cares?
Oh, yeah, I get that.
Does the new culture translate to the field? Now, I know you're going to have to project here. Do you think a different culture, a new culture, will translate to the field?
I think you should listen to Joe Milton today at noon. When there were things that he said, Kevin, that sounded like they were right out of Shoddy's mouth. And not in that he was just regurgitating it. It sounded like he believed these things. The hey, you need to know your teammate off the field. Like those kinds of things, that's what Shoddy's really trying to build. Mickey was talking about that yesterday, right? Well, hey, man, if you're having this crawfish, do it together. Be the team. So I do think that it's getting there. It's going to take time, though. Kevin, you've watched Ted Lasso. You know. It takes time to get that locker room, fully on board. You got to get to know players, know how to push their buttons. And I think one of the things that maybe Jerry and them, whenever they hired Schottenheimer, knew was, well, he's been here. He knows these guys. He's not going to need that much time to figure out the players. And that might be a benefit early on. But it does seem like they're in a good mood. But it's, Kevin, it's early. Early
sure.
In camp, it's honeymoon. Let's get rolling. Everybody's playing for jobs and money and all that stuff right now.
One of the things I know some folks took notice of yesterday is you drop a pass in some of the drills. You have to drop down and do push-ups.
Yeah, that was fun.
And so,
hey, keep doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
And that's it's going to make you stronger in your chest and your back and your triceps.
Okay.
Abs, core area. But also, it's going to remind you not to drop that ball next time.
All right. Now, we might be a little biased because we talked to him yesterday, so I'm curious your thoughts. Who would you trust Will Greer or Joe Milton more to win games as the quarterback if Dak was out? Because I know the idea of like, well, Dak's out, you want to tank it out. Let's say you're in a scenario where you can still make the playoffs and that's what everyone wants to do and all of that good stuff. Who would you trust more to win games, Will Greer or Joe Milton right now?
Will Greer's had a chance.
He has.
What's his record?
I'll have to go look that
Joe
up.
Joe Milton's been electric at times. I would have probably, unbiasedly before the interview, had said him, mostly because he got all the second team reps yesterday. How many times you what saw maybe four series out of the whole practice for Will?
Yeah.
And so that was the seeing Milton get that many reps was nice. And my first question was, is he getting those reps because they don't know enough about him and they're trying to see him? Or is he getting them because he deserves it? And then after watching him throw, I was like, oh, now I know what Choppy was talking about. Dude can throw higher than anybody. What was the meme that that Carter was telling me about last night? Was it the balloon that was flying over the country for a while that everybody was concerned about? And there was a picture of Joe Milton, you know, getting ready to throw a ball at it and knock it down out of the sky. So I would trust that just because, if nothing else, Joe Milton to George Pickens, 50-50 ball. Or as Shoddy said yesterday, Kevin, 70-30. I know you love that one. That was your favorite thing of the whole day.
I did. Plus the idea that he said if George Pickens is single covered, he's open.
Yes. Yes.
And obviously the same would translate to CeeDee Lamb, but I think that's super exciting.
That's why, Kevin, we talk so much about what Dak sees when he walks to the line, whenever he's looking. Where's my safety? When I see where once I see that safety, I know which side of the field I'm about to go to, unless they're disguising it. But most of the times, they're trying to, with our wide receivers, they have to be in position because they're going to get beat.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We are live from Oxnard, and coming up next, we will talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo, next right here in The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. We are live from Oxnard. By the way, be on the lookout for those Best Buy windows and siding confessional videos. We got some quick Stars news for you. The Dallas Stars are going to induct Joe Neuwendijk and Ralph Strangis into the team's Hall of Fame. And I can tell that actually makes several people in the tent right here very happy. I think for a lot of us, Ralph Strangis was...
He taught me hockey.
Yeah,
Him and Razor taught me hockey.
The voice of the Stars, and then obviously Joe Neuwendijk, a humongous part of the run to the Stanley Cup championship in 1999. Right now, the man who is going to guide this Cowboys team to the championship, I've determined, because he loves questions that far off in the future. We bring to you from DallasCowboys.com, Mickey Spagnuolo. Is that a fair breakdown and introductory statement about you?
Yes, absolutely. I got all the answers, right? They just need to ask me.
Yeah. Was there... It's the first day, so obviously we're all cautious about being like, I have these grand narratives off of one pseudo-practice. But there were definitely some fun plays, whether it was the Duran knockaway of the Pickens catch or was the Nealon pick six. Was there any particular like moment or play or whatever that you were like, oh, that was interesting?
Well, I came away with the fact, and see, this is hard because there's no pads on.
Yes,
for
right?
Sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
But they were somewhat successful running the football.
Yeah.
And some long runs, yes. Which I thought was weird because I'm looking at the paper today. And the thing about running the football, the first play, it said Javonte Williams fell down. Well, the next play, he went 80 yards for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you start?
That's 40 yards a carry. I'll take it.
Right? So I thought that was strange. I thought the pace of practice was good. That was something that Schottenheimer wanted to kind of empower with this team.
Can you explain that a little bit more? Because I know you're used to it, and like I saw your thing about this is the 40th time spending at least 1 week in training camp with the Cowboys. And by the way, my side question for that, were the 1988 Olympics really worth it to skip out of training camp? But like,
so, 3.5 weeks in Seoul, Korea? Come on.
I'll take it.
So you get to see this. Yeah. You are very familiar. Can you explain for people, like, what do you mean when you say the pace of practice?
It things just kept moving.
Yes. Yeah.
And even during individual drills, the pace was boom, 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 yeah. boom, go to the next thing. And I think that was one of the things he wanted to establish. And when they were calling plays, now remember, the head coach is calling the plays.
Yeah.
And it was run the play, get back in the huddle, and go again. And there were a couple of times on those deep passes, and I remember one, CD ended up 60 yards down the field. They didn't wait for him to come back.
No.
Yeah, and he's running back. It was like, all right, get another wide receiver in there. We'll run this play, and you can go in on the next play. We're not lollygagging around, right?
Yeah, I like that as well.
And I thought that was something he wanted to establish. We saw it in the OTAs, in the mini camp, and it continued here. Also, the enthusiasm of these assistant coaches that, you know, some of them in the NFL for the first time. And, you know, they're you know, getting these guys moving. They're talking. So, I like that. I like the energy on the defense for sure.
Yes.
And a lot of guys are getting opportunities that if they were totally healthy, wouldn't be out there. So, again, I thought that was, you know, looking good. Now, we made so much a deal. I guess maybe it was in the press conference, we're going to have to redefine what participating in practice is.
For sure. Hey, right? They were out there on the
field.
They
were out there.
That existed.
And I should have brought my bike helmet and showed you. You just kind of put it up on the back
whenever
of your head.
Whenever
right?
you're cruising.
So yes. The helmet, yeah, the helmet is up on the back of Micah Parsons' head. Now, he did stretch with the team. And he was actually with the team, so that was an improvement.
He was, and we talked about this in the last segment, and this could be a big nothing, but I thought it was at least encouraging that he wasn't isolated when you say with the team. He was chatting Ezeraku up quite a bit.
Right.
Following plays or drills or whatever.
Right. But he wasn't participating.
Yeah, you're right.
He was a watcher.
Yeah.
You know, and the guys that we expected to continue rehabbing continued to rehab. That was a good thing. Positive. Sam Williams was out there.
He
right?
was pretty physical too yesterday.
Right.
He blew
somebody up on a. It was
a tight end, I believe.
Yeah, it was. It was a running play, and the tight end got in his way, and he just cold cocked him.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be a little bit of a scuffle after that for a second because they did walk next to each other for quite
and
some
I
time.
And I think folks need to understand he tore his ACL the end of July. So he's had a long rehab for him, and he's ready to go. So I thought that was good. That was a positive. I'm watching Savon Revel do his rehab with Britt Brown, and he looks like he's ready to go. I would imagine they're going to continue his rehab for this week during ramp-up, and I wouldn't be surprised if maybe next week when the pads come on, he's ready to go. And that helps out the cornerback position greatly.
Okay, and I'm glad you moved in that direction because is it maybe most intrigued, curious, concerned, whatever the right word is, about the cornerbacks? Not in terms of the talent, but just because, like you said, you have so many people like working back from
health.
Things. Yeah.
Right? You've got three guys coming back from knee surgeries, and that includes Josh Butler, who, by the way, kind of made a cameo appearance as a starter, and then he tore his ACL. Trayvon Diggs working back with Britt Brown, rehabbing, and he looked like he was moving well, but again, because they didn't have their hands on him, they got to see where he's at. Personally, not looking at film of, you know, video of him working out with somebody else, and you get a better feel for when he's going to be ready. He says he's ahead of schedule. He's 500,000 behind schedule.
Just about that. I know that has become a huge deal.
And I'm not sure why.
It's written into the contract that, like, if you don't meet the certain percentage of workouts here at you know, the facility, then you won't get this bonus. And people keep saying
it's not a bonus. It's a subtraction from his $9 million base salary.
Okay. And so I know he said his feelings were a little hurt, and I understand that.
Did he read his contract?
I would also like $500,000. You do not think that this is like as big of a deal as perhaps the number of headlines it's got?
Well, he doesn't think so.
Yeah.
He said his feelings were hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you knew that was a clause in your contract about working out in the off season, especially coming off an injury. Now, he said, I'll make it back with incentives. There's an incentive for interceptions. But you also got to be on the field. And I think I mentioned it yesterday. He also has a per-game incentive that if he would play all 17 games, he would make another $1 million. So every game he misses, he loses $58,000 on that incentive.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So
maybe my number's higher than on how many he plays this year.
So, again, and again, if whatever you did in the offseason, rehabbing away, and you're not ready to start the season, first game, 58, and second game, 58, and it just keeps going, right? So, you know, to me, hopefully, they're hoping that he did everything he needed to do to rehab, so he's ready to start the season, and he's not missing games. They don't want him to miss games. Say he misses the opener. Okay, you got Deron Bland. Maybe you have Revel. Well, and then you're sitting there going, oh, career Elam, can you really step up and play like a first-round draft choice that he never really did in Buffalo?
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure on him to be in the top three if Diggs is not there.
Now, I'm not necessarily basing this off of practice yesterday, but I know Shoddy has talked about it a lot leading up to it. Are you anticipating, excited for maybe a little bit more pre-snap motion or things along those lines? Oh, that's a big shrug right there. If you're not watching him on the Twitch or the YouTube, that was a big giant shrug of,
I mean, I've seen motion. Okay, fine. Here's what motion does. It identifies if the defense is in man coverage or zone.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're in man coverage and your wide receiver's in motion left to right, if they're man, the man's following them. If not, the cornerback on the other side's widening out, and it's like, okay, he's coming into my zone. So, I mean, if it was the panacea of deception, you would do it every play, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I like that.
Which I do think guys like Mike McDaniels, and I think they do it sometimes just
and they
because.
Might,
Sean McVay, just because.
Yeah, it's not like they're trying to deceive you.
Yeah.
They're trying to identify where the linebackers are doing, what the cornerbacks are doing.
Panacea of deception is my new favorite word. Yeah, we're going to use that from now on. I've been very adamant. I wanted to go back to Javonte Williams real quick. Very adamant that if he could make, I watched a lot of Denver games last year because he was on my fantasy team. And so I saw a lot of times him, and I didn't know if it was the offensive line or him just coming off the injury, but I was like, if he could have made a cut there, that's different. And that's been what I've been saying. If he can make one cut, he's going to be a good running back for this team. I think the offensive line can block it. Do you see a guy that looks healthier right now? And also, does it look like there is a pecking order at this running back spot right now?
I think it's Javonte Williams, and really all you got to do is follow the money.
Yeah.
He got the most.
Yeah.
Miles Sanders next, and you know, he's playing on the veteran minimum exception where you get paid a little bit more, but you only count like just a tad over $1 million against the cap. And then after that, I think it's Jaden Blue. And how quickly can they integrate him into the offense to really know what he's doing? I think a couple plays, you saw his speed when he exploded around the corner. Which game was it with Texas? It was one of the plays. Was it Clemson? He had the big runs. There was those big runs for touchdowns. And you're going, oh, okay. And my thinking is third down, if he happens to be the third down back, And I've got Pickens and Lamb on the outside and Turpin in the slot, That's a lot of speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of speed. Turpin was running out of the backfield yesterday,
right,
too.
He had a couple of yes. He had a couple of plays.
So you know, Schottenheimer's going to make a priority of running the football. Now, how well, that's what we got to find out. But he will not get away from it. If you look at his numbers when he was in Seattle and the Jets, the running game was always effective. I think one year with Seattle, they were number one in rushing in the league.
Oh,
and that was, I mean, Carroll obviously was committed to it,
right.
But it was his job to make sure those were drawn up and installed.
And when he was in these different places, it was just with guys.
Yeah.
You know, and Clayton Adams, the offensive line coach, now the coordinator here, but when he was in Arizona, is it James Conner,
mm-hmm.
running back?
Yeah.
The guy was effective.
Yeah, he was.
And he was just thought of as a guy, but the running game was effective. Now, it helps if you have Kyler Murray at quarter running back.
Yeah.
That's okay. Look, Jerry said Michael Parsons once. That's okay. It happens.
The other thing, too, is obviously body types are interesting to see. Nealon and Guyton look like they've grown into men.
Yes.
It looks like Guyton looks like he's put on weight, and yesterday watching him, he looked like he knew what he was doing. Whereas last year at this point, it looked like he was still trying to catch up and get up to speed on
things. He just hadn't played a lot of football.
Yeah.
You know, and again, if they had a healthy and better third swing tackle, he might not have played as much as he did. But Tuma Doga, okay? That guy makes me kind of suck air through my teeth. Like,
that is not what I expected you to say.
And then he got hurt.
Yeah.
And so now Guyton, he's got to play, right? And so, but again, I thought the few opportunities that Awesome Richards got last year.
I liked him too, yeah.
So Guyton better be careful because right now he's the swing tackle. Usually your swing tackle is an aging veteran that you just plug in. And
interesting.
And Richards might be the guy, and he doesn't have a lot of experience. That's why, like, that position, I think it takes experience because you don't get that many reps in practice. Same thing with the backup quarterback. Once the season starts, Dak, you know, he hogs all the snaps. And so the backup quarterback has to rely on preparation and experience. And the experience at that position is three NFL games between the two guys.
Wow.
And two of those were 2019 when Greer was a rookie.
Wow, yeah. Man, well, great stuff as always. Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. We will catch up with you again tomorrow.
I'll be here. I don't know if I'll have my tank top on.
I appreciate you rocking Tank Top Tuesday on a Wednesday, as you promised yesterday.
I made up for it.
Yes,
there
you did.
There you go. Coming up next, it's time for some baseball nuggets. Is Adolis playing too well to trade? And also our trip to Dodger Stadium. All of it next right here on The Fan.
Harris fires, and that ball is hit high and deep to right field. Thomas going back. He's at the wall, and it is gone! Into the Rangers bullpen. Corey Seager with a three-run home run, and the Rangers now lead 6-1.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Those Texas Rangers, they have won 7 of their last 9 going back to, I believe, the final series of the first half. If you're more focused on how the second half has started, they have won 4 of 5.
4 is 4.
That is right.
Yep.
And
trust me.
I do. I just wanted to throw this in there as an additional note. We were talking about this yesterday. This is now the first time the Rangers have been 2 games or more above 500 since May 18th.
Okay. All right. That's
so
good.
So this is the best record they've had in more than 2 months. So let's talk about it. As we go, courtesy of Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement, into some baseball nuggets.
Given my question, and I don't know if you have this answer, so forgive me. What's the furthest under 500 they've been this season,
I think,
you know?
6 games.
Okay, so for me, this continues to feel like a climb.
Sure.
Kevin, this is going to sound cheesy. A baseball season's a journey. And I feel
if
like
you say it's about the friends you made along the way. I'm out.
I do think there are new friends. Rowdy Tellez is one of them. I think there are some new some things that are just like, hey, we needed to figure some things out along the way. Health wise, let's build to the end of the season. I think by the end of the season, Kevin, I think they're going to surpass the Astros, and they're going to end up winning this division. That's where I feel right now. That's where my heart is.
Man.
And I am ready to continue watching this surge up the standings, Kevin. And last night was the formula for how the Rangers win baseball games. Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, and Adolis Garcia all have home runs in a game. That's how we win baseball again, Kevin.
Okay, and that kind of leads into one of our broader questions right here. But, and it was, in fact, I believe, six games below 500 at 29-35. So, hooray.
Yeah, let's keep this climb.
Okay.
Now you're two over. Let's get to six over.
Okay, agreed. And you mentioned it, that trio of folks hitting home runs. And so I wanted to focus in on this because a lot of people have, they've talked about the idea that they do not want Adolis Garcia to get traded. And I get that from both a sentimental and like on the field reason. But one of the reasons I think we've talked about it a lot is you've heard some of the buzz, and that's the thing. If the Rangers were going to bring in some more players, they don't necessarily have the cash to make that happen. And so if you traded off somebody like Adolis Garcia, that would probably get you in a position to pick up more of the players that you would want or need. But
if he's the player you that you want or need,
right,
and he's playing like that player, then you don't need anything else.
And so, and that's an interesting thing, because if you look at the first two full months of the season, so April and May, he was wildly disappointing. But then,
which is kind of his MO, is there stretches where you're just like, what's happening?
Oh, for sure. Look, that's what I say all the time. Hot Adolis Garcia, I think, is the best player in the league. And I don't mean that hyperbolically. I think when he's on fire, I'll take him over anybody.
Yeah.
So you look at June and you look at July, and it's not as pronounced as Marcus Semien. We talked a lot about June 1st, Marcus Semien is like really taking off.
A switch flipped, yeah, and it just it said we're not turning off.
But Adolis Garcia has been playing significantly better from pretty much all perspectives, from his power efficiency to his batting average to his OPS, although OPS makes sense if you consider the other two things that I said, is he's been playing significantly better. And this month, he's hitting 250 with a 738 OPS. I'm not saying that is going to change the world or anything, but for a team that has struggled consistently this season with offense, he has turned it back up to a level that, quite frankly, is still better than a lot of Rangers players.
Yeah, and that is, again, those three are the key to this whole thing, because that's the heart of your order. They get the most at-bats. Your leadoff guy and that group are going to get the most at-bats and the most opportunities to score, to drive in runs. And they have lacked that so much. What does that do? That eases the burden on guys like Wyatt Langford and Josh Young lower down in the lineup, because if those guys are doing their job, it eases it for them, allows them to get base hits and not have to produce so much, so many runs. That's a great thing right there. But that trio, Kevin, they're paid like that. They are your leaders for a specific reason. And them finally finding that timing that Bochy's been talking about all season at this point in the season, here on out, this is a really good quality thing. Look, I know it's the A's, but it was just the Tigers and the Astros a couple weeks last time.
Yeah, Tigers had the best record in baseball heading into that series.
You have to beat the teams
for sure
that are bad. You got to punish them, and the Rangers right now are punishing the A's, and I like it.
Look, we talk about this a lot. This ain't the BCS, right? You can beat all the crappiest teams in baseball and make the playoffs just fine.
The other thing too is, Kevin, there was a big article you brought up maybe 2 months ago, maybe a month and a half ago.
Okay.
About the ball not carrying.
Yes.
And
more so at this state, our stadium.
And those three guys seem to be have been suffering from it. Even Adolis was like, yeah, it's kind of in my head a little bit.
Yeah, they referenced it.
But then again, you get those three guys hitting a home run. That's the vision. Like, that's what you're hoping for, is at some point either one of the two of those does it in the game, or if all three of them do it, you're feeling really confident.
Now, I really specifically wanted to go back, if we could, for just a second for Adolis, and I should say a specific period of time. If you look at the last 6 weeks, Adolis Garcia ranks top 20 in the league in average exit velocity. He's in the 92nd percentile. Now, that doesn't always translate, but I think over a long period of time, it does translate.
He's squaring the ball up, and that's important.
Okay, you just use that term, squaring the ball up. Barrel percentage, 84th percentile in the league, and hard hit percentage, 82nd percentile in the league. And then if you want to look at defense, I think this is something that if you've watched the Rangers, you were aware of. His arm strength is in the 93rd percentile of Major League Baseball. And especially if you look in this last like 6 weeks, we've gotten to the point, especially if John Gray is going to be back and be pretty versatile with this team. We can talk more with Boach about that at 12:30. Maybe you don't feel like the pressing need to get a closer as much. That's just a theory. And if that's the case, then you wouldn't need to necessarily clear off as much money. Because I know some people have said, I want to trade Adolis Garcia. I am just telling you the finances of it all.
Yeah, and what if Sporzy's healthy and comes back and is ready to rock as the closer at the end of the season out of nowhere? So, yeah, lots of good things could happen there, man. That's awesome.
I could definitely see him helping us win the World Series.
I've seen it before.
Oh, that makes sense.
Like in a dream, I believe. Or maybe I wasn't dreaming. I don't know exactly.
God, what a great call that was, right?
Kevin, I know, yes. Oh, dude, it's Eric Nadell, of course. Of course it was a great call.
Fair.
Let's not lose sight also of yet another dominant performance by Jacob deGrom.
You know, it's really funny that you say that because I think I see why people get desensitized to that, and we've only seen it in the short term, and you're right. Absolutely shouldn't. He mows through 6 innings, 9 strikeouts, and you're right. Absolutely don't skip over that. I'm excited. I know this is a selfish reason. I'm most excited because they're winning. But I also look at some of those stats and I'm like, Cy Young?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why aren't people noticing that? Mm-hmm. He was 5 pitches over what we call his line.
The 81 threshold, yeah.
But he was 86, 60 of them strikes. You say desensitized. I agree. Because he's so efficient, it's almost like he wasn't there. You know, you're like, oh, and you take it for granted. And then you're like, oh my gosh, like we cruise through this game not worrying about runs because of him. So like at one point he retired, what, 10 straight last night? This dude is a bona fide Cy Young candidate, and they need to notice better right now.
Okay.
But I guess it's because is he not going 9 innings, complete game shutouts all that?
I think it's just because Skubal has been so good. He's a candidate. It feels like Skubal's one. And then the list starts at like 4. You know what I'm saying? Because there's that defined kind of gap between everybody else. But I do want to throw this out as well. He's kind of the anti-Paul Skeens. It's not Paul Skeens' fault. But the Pirates don't take advantage of his tremendous pitching performances.
The Rangers are?
Exactly. Now, if you want to say you don't care about the pitcher win, I get that. But if you just look at it, DeGrom is now 10-2. I don't care about that so much for his record. Why I care about that more is when he's pitching, and when he's pitching well, the Rangers are winning these games.
They're there for him.
Exactly.
That's a big deal, man.
And so that is encouraging. And when you talk about the climb, you're going to need that with him and Eovaldi. And I'm going to seek clarification, but I do think there's a good shot. You'll see, I believe, Eovaldi on Friday or Saturday. If they already announced that this morning, I apologize for missing that. But we will confirm that with Bruce Bochy. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We are live out here in Oxnard, California, courtesy of the on-time experts Rhino Shield and Yardbird, Southern Table and a Bar. You also heard Mickey Spagnola on that Wild Fork Foods Hot Seat, wildforkfoods.com, Elite Game Day Grilling. Trust me, they do food better than I can say it. All right? You're just gonna have to take my word for it.
It's I've been in there. It's amazing, dude. Trust me on that one.
Coming up next, we have the opportunity to talk to DeMarvion Overshown. So we're going to get to that and maybe other interviews you've heard of. Maybe not. Next on The Fan.